Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Alpha Talks Editors Roundtable. What moved markets this week, the week concluding Friday, January 15, 2021, the second week of the new year. A relatively quiet week still, but towards the end of the week, we did have some things happening. We have bank earnings, and bank stocks are selling off on this. We had, of course, the market disappointment to the Biden stimulus plans. At least that's the only way that I can characterize what's been going on. And add it all up, and we are down for the week. So looking forward to discussing this with my colleagues, starting with Brad Olison, the VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, and again, our special guest this week for the second week in a row, Jason Aycock, Senior Editor of Media and Telecoms. This week, it's Stephen Alfer who is off. And I am your host, Nathaniel Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. All right, let's start, as we often do, with Kim to give us the big picture layout.
Well, this week we've seen basically a lot of on again, off again for the reflation trade. We've seen like some days like going into the Biden speech or stimulus, it was on. There was some excitement about it. And then today, selling off, kind of disappointment on the or sell the news reaction. We saw the 10-year yield hit the breach its post-pandemic high at 1.18%. That goes all the way back to its big spike in March, and then went right back down intraday with some Fed comments saying that they're not interested in looking at tapering anytime soon. So it's been back and forth with that reflation trade, and you've seen cyclicals trade on that. And what we've seen with the broader market is that you can have cyclicals rally, but if they don't get like one of the other mega cap sectors to go along with them, then you're looking at a flatter down day.
All right. How about some of the winners and losers? I touched on them, banks and such. Bradley, why don't you lead us through that?
So sort of a continuation of what we've seen in the last few weeks. Energy was a big winner. We mentioned how energy kind of rebounded in the latter part of 2019, but energy definitely got a little bit of tailwind from Brent crude, which is still on its way higher. So Exxon, despite Friday's news that they were the subject of an investigation related to the valuation of the Permian assets, Exxon is still up in double digits despite that investigation. Occidental Petroleum, that's OXY, is up about 20%. HollyFrontier and Marathon Oil were also up in the double digits, likely the beneficiaries of some of this strong crude price reactions. And with regard to that, I think JP Morgan analysts pointed to the near-term Saudi backstop. Basically, the Saudi Arabia had made an announcement that they were going to be cutting some of the production, and the subsequent demand recovery and structural supply changes in the oil market, which could help bring Brent crude up to its eventual $60 plus area in the Brent crude. So energy definitely a huge winner here. And I know we briefly talked about the 10-year yield. We mentioned that last week and how important that is for the equity markets. And we saw some of that today, as you mentioned, with the banks. Some of the banks are selling off. Some of them had some decent results, I think JP Morgan, but Wells Fargo cited the weak net interest income as a big part of some of their expectations for structural weakness going forward. And obviously that's hugely dependent upon the yield curve steepening, as banks will make money on that spread. And you know, as we saw that the precipitous rise in the 10-year yield over the past week, as Kim alluded to, it did kind of fall back a little bit. And JP Morgan analysts kind of had weighed in on the 10-year note, given its precipitous rise recently, noting that they do expect there to be a little bit of support and for it to be range bound here for the next few weeks, just given how fast that yield has risen as the Treasury sold off.
And Goldman boosted their year-end target for the 10-year up to 1.5% from 1.3 yesterday.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how that all unfolds. Something else that we haven't talked about yet, which was very much happened after we recorded last week, of course, was all the news around social media banning the president and some other accounts. And perhaps as a result, the social media stocks, I just looked, are down for the week. Twitter, I believe, is the worst of them.
Right.
And so that is a good lead into our next guest, or our guest, I should say, Jason Aycock, who covers maybe not social media, but the broader media and telecoms sector. And be curious to see what he has to say about this week's activity.
Yeah, certainly. And social media, this was, I mean, once you absorb the news that they were going to be banning the president, the stock moves were fairly predictable. Twitter's down by double digits this week. The bulk of that move came, I think, on Monday, the immediate reaction to the weekend bans. And I think if you were going to measure, you know, the Trump effect anywhere, Trump and Twitter are probably the biggest correspondence there. He has 88 million followers, or had, excuse me, he had 88 million followers in the service. They're not going to let him back on there. There's no question he drove their engagement. And so the Twitter move in particular, and the other moves to a lesser extent, are speaking to the possible engagement hit they're going to get. But turning largely to the tech sector, I was going to say that it's the story more so than social media that coming into the week, I expected the top stories might come out of the Consumer Electronics Show, which took place virtually this week. Hmm. And in my experience, though, that considering the sheer number of companies that present at CES each year, it's not typically a huge stock moving event. There's a lot of products that are announced that won't be generally available for the better part of a year, maybe longer. And a lot of those that do don't necessarily come as shocks to the industry. Getting things like bigger, cooler televisions, those are generally following a glide path that investors and observers know about. So you don't tend to get shocks that would goose stocks. It's been good, if anything, for true fundamental investors who want to make sure that product development roadmaps are still promising for the companies they're following. If anything, it occurred to me that this year's CES might have a bigger, outsized impact on the economy of Las Vegas, which it depends on that sort of convention influx every year. CES is already set for a virtual gathering next January as well. So really? Obviously what that might do to Vegas. But more so than CES, the biggest story, I think, to come to the forefront in technology this week is in semiconductors. Mm-hmm. This is an industry that's facing a serious silicon shortage. And that's meant higher prices for chips. And as we know, chips don't just feed your computer, they feed everything. There's higher prices for chips, but there's also supply problems. There's delayed orders, and there's delayed production of items that depend on the chips. And there's a few factors that are involved in the shortage. One comes out of the pandemic, a huge surge in laptop demand as people move to remote work. And that's caused real crunches in terms of laptop chip supply. Later on in the year, boom in 5G smartphones and demand for new phones, which also strained the supply chains. And also auto sales are starting to rebound. And that's actually pressing automakers. Ford this week said they were idling capacity due to chip shortages. Hmm. Other automakers are considering the same thing. Hmm. There's two ways that I think the chip shortage is showing up really at the forefront of tech investors' minds this week. One, of course, is that Intel changed captains this week. They faced notable product delays. So a change at the top is a very big deal. And it relates to this story of chip shortages, delays, production delays, slowdowns.
And on that note, it's not a big ego boost when your stock rises almost 10% when you leave, right? So I think that's what happened. And you know, obviously, we don't. Bob Swan is very respected across the world. But
to the stock gained 10%.
Right, and it was quite a surprise when that happened. And I think. To Jason's point, some of the Wall Street reactions to that news were that long term they think it's probably a good sign, and they are bullish on Intel's ability to kind of recover from all of these structural issues. But near term, I think the company still has a lot of challenges, according to a lot of the Wall Street research who weighed in on that rather bombshell like news.
Yeah. You would think if they sold off some of these assets, though, it would certainly make people very happy, I guess, depending on the price they get for them. Now on this silicon thing, though, sounds like it's a question of supply. Like you say, demand is still robust, right, Jason? So demand, it's just an issue of supply chains. I mean, how significant is this? I mean, it sounds like a short-term hiccup to me, but.
You would think so, but mm-hmm. the thing about supply chains and silicon is you can't fix them. You can't drop a bunch of capacity online in a week, and you can't really do it in a month. Sometimes you can't do it in 4 months. These are long cycles to get capital equipment for them. Which actually segues neatly into what I think is really the top story of the week, which is Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing. They're the world's leader in actually producing these chips. Yesterday, they announced their results, record for the quarter and for the year. Record revenues, record profits, and that's based on some of the factors I mentioned, especially going into the end of 2020. The iPhone demand helped feed Taiwan Semi's record profits, record revenues. But really the more important number to come out of the results was a heavily watched number, their capital spending for 2021. They spent $17 billion on capital last year in CapEx. A lot of observers said, well, that's gonna go up to $20 billion in 2021. They're planning to spend $25 billion to as much as $28 billion this year. That is a massive number. That's more than half their expected revenues for all of 2021. And I think it speaks to a couple of things. It speaks to the shortage. It's, you know, these, like I said, this capacity hasn't come online immediately. It could take months. So they're basically, they sent a message saying we're serious about helping to address this industry-wide situation. And it also speaks to their confidence that they're going to keep taking share. There's a catalyst coming up next week for Intel. Intel has been talking with Taiwan Semi and with Samsung about outsourcing a lot of their production. That's a thing that Intel needs. They've been faced with manufacturing delays. And I think Taiwan Semi saying, we're going to spend $28 billion this year and spend part of that on building a new plant in Arizona to handle U.S. customers is a real indicator that Intel might go with Taiwan Semi. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people expect. But that figure is basically saying, we're serious about addressing the shortage. We're confident we're going to be the ones to do it. And it has spillover effects, of course, for the whole chip industry. I mean, Advanced Micro Devices, NVIDIA, Texas Instruments, and Qualcomm, which made its own move this week with a deal to buy Nuvia for $1.4 billion. That's a two-year-old startup run by former Apple chip executives. So the Taiwan Semi thing is a very big deal. That's a massive sum of capital spending. And I think it speaks to how long it's going to take to get this back on track. But mm-hmm. also confidence that it will get back on track. We're going to move to a new platform level of chip production.
Yeah. I mean, usually if you see all this CapEx from these companies, it's typically a good thing about the economy. It speaks to confidence. And like I say, the demand is there. You know, everyone's buying laptops, they just got a new one. And phones, of course, and such. So interesting. So yeah, but that is certainly one sector to watch. So it sounds like there is more going on this week than I had anticipated. Let's turn now to the segment of the show where we discuss our favorite stories, articles, and other items, news, or commentary that we have seen, edited, sometimes written. In fact, with my colleagues, it's often always written, as they use this as an opportunity to pump their own stories, which is fine for now until it gets out of hand and we'll put a stop to it. But why don't we start with Kim?
Well, with Steve out, I'm going to slide into his usual space, not Bitcoin, but ARK Investment Management.
Okay.
And ARK Invest, they actually, at the end of last year, ARK Invest kind of fended off a battle with a minority shareholder, cemented Cathie Wood's position, and kind of came out, hit the ground running in the new year by announcing the ARK Space Exploration ETF, which is going to be actively managed. Saw a lot of stocks jump on that in anticipation that they could be in, Virgin Galactic being the obvious one that soared on that. But they also had a webinar this week that it was pretty interesting and had, you know, not just, they got a lot of questions from the audience about the Apple Car. And they had some, now they said it's it's very early, as everyone knows it is, but they said the good sign for the Apple car is that they've put their head of AI in charge of the project, because that is the way to go with dealing with the self-driving and automation problems, but also said that it's just pretty much looks already too late for Apple, that Tesla has kind of cemented its position, started making their own chips for self-driving, and most importantly said that they've got about, like, you know, 20 billion like on-road miles in automation driving already to work with, that they've seen through their vehicles and that kind of data. And so they think they're going to be the dominant player.
Now, hold on there. I admit I wasn't paying complete attention, but Apple is planning space exploration?
No, the self-driving car.
Oh, okay. So these are two separate things. Got it.
I'm sure that's next.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, they can make a really nice looking spaceship.
Other than Virgin Galactic, are there any companies that this fund can even buy?
I mean, there's Maxar, which is you know, like, it does a lot of components and you know, with space exploration as well. And there's quite a few other, like, you know, smaller companies that kind of feed into the space that they can pick and choose. And you know, I don't know how rich the pickings are going to be, but yeah.
Yeah, I think of some satellite companies and maybe in-flight entertainment companies, perhaps, that rely on satellites.
You can need
perhaps
a lot of in-flight entertainment if you're going to Mars, man, I'm telling you. I mean, there would be an opportunity for arbitrage, right? Buy up all these companies that you think this ARK fund is going to invest in. And anyway. All right, that's pretty interesting. Jason, what about you?
Well, I was going to say that the Taiwan Semi CapEx number was my top story, but as you mentioned, that's a story I wrote about that yesterday. So I've talked about it at length. Rather than dwelling on that, I would say the story I think is most interesting to me. It's not undercovered or anything, but Joe Biden unveiling that plan for $1.9 trillion in stimulus. That's going to have outsized effects, you know, even beyond, I think, what people think. When you talk about extending unemployment insurance, you know, there's parts of the plan that are being getting more coverage, mainly the one-time checks. If one-time checks for $1,400 come out, I think obviously way more important is extending unemployment insurance that will help mitigate some of the ripple effects on things like evictions, rent, consumer goods throughout the rest of the year. And I think it's anybody's guess during any given week what's going to happen with stimulus. I think that was the game we played every week during the fall. Like, is stimulus coming now? What happens next? What happens with a blue wave? What happens with no blue wave? I think now that the dust is settling a little bit, there's a good chance that much of this agenda gets enacted, and that's going to have outsized effects on the broader economic recovery, which, you know, infects every sector we talk about.
But you would think some of the more ambitious parts of this, like the $15 per hour minimum wage thing, is a bit of a non-starter. Like, you would need all 50 Democratic senators to sign on to that, and you're probably
we talked about it last week, I think, right, with some of these middle of the road senators now being the de facto president, making out these, they wield outsized power, Senator Manchin and some of the other more moderate Democrats and Republicans.
So minimum wage seems a bit like a bargaining chip to me that they can kind of seed ground on. I think the GOP will have a good case of small businesses trying to recover from the pandemic as a, you know, counter to that. So, but they might have just be something that they can give.
Yeah,
people wouldn't be good negotiators and didn't ask for too much at first.
Right.
Yeah. All right. And then Brad, what about you?
Favorite stories? Just building on Kim's, electric vehicle, autonomous driving theme, the more interesting story to me was the Lucid Churchill Capital speculation. This is, again, kind of a story we've been talked about for the last few months, how the SPAC market has just exploded over the past few months. Maybe that's a structural issue. It's been often talked about how there's just been a decline in publicly available equities, and there's just this thirst for any new issuance that comes down the pike. A stat I saw was that there were SPACs and IPOs raised almost $9 billion in 2018, $13 billion in 2019, $83 billion in 2020, and we're up to $15 billion in the first couple of weeks of 2021. So new issuance is all the rage, but specifically regarding the electric vehicle sector, Lucid Motors, this is a company that CFRA in their 2021 calls mentioned as a potential competitor to Tesla, along with Rivian. Basically, these are the two companies that might be the biggest competitors to Tesla. These were a company that you may want to watch, but they may become public through this SPAC called Churchill Capital IV, I believe. And so now that story has kind of been an on again, off again. We saw news break earlier this week that may not happen. And then later just this morning that potentially it could be back on again, but ultimately the talks were ongoing. And I think this builds upon other speculation in the SPAC market that we've seen. We saw with Ackman's SPAC, PSTH, late last week on Friday, had one of its biggest moves in share price since its inception. You know, this is a long rumored deal with Bloomberg that was, you know, rebutted by Bloomberg's PR company itself. But it seems like the speculations for SPACs are rife at this point.
Yeah, SPACs and crypto are two things I have really no views on or even really educated opinions on, other than that they're probably both overvalued. But that's all I got on that topic. All right, thanks all for listening. Keep in mind, this Editor's Roundtable airs on the video, airs around 4 p.m. around the market close every Friday afternoon. Go to seekingalpha.com/videos to sign up. And the podcast audio version is released on Saturday morning around 6:30 a.m. So with that, we thank you all for watching or listening, as the case may be, and look forward to speaking to you all again next week. Enjoy the long weekend if you're in the U.S., and stay safe. Bye.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.